let's talk about it. So I'm going to put that under 8, other business not on the agenda. Moving meeting time, that would be. Okay, approval of the minutes. Have you all read the minutes? And Aaron and I have talked about some changes.
You've got me both present and absent, so I was asking.
You don't have me anywhere.
Body experience.
Wow. All right.
Misspelling of Terry's name. It's Doyle, not Boyle.
That's been captured already.
Okay.
Richard, were you in attendance or not?
No, I wasn't.
I believe I was, and I'm not listed either.
Got it.
What else? So my wish would be that you would take a couple of minutes to look at the minutes before you come to the meeting.
It's a good idea for having the meeting start later.
All right. No other changes?
Who's the gentleman to, right?
I'm sorry?
Who's the gentleman to, right?
Joel Keller is our liaison for Parks.
Oh, thank you.
That's fine.
Okay. Can I have a motion that the minutes be approved as corrected?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, thank you. I know that Barry Thalden is coming. Oh, here he comes. He's just moving his way in. Injured his hamstring, so he's moving slowly. And this would be the spot where I'm going to ask him to talk, so give him just a second. Good morning. We are at the exact place in the agenda where we're ready to talk to you. Do you want to sit down? I know that would be easier for you. I don't know whether you've all met Barry Thalden in person. Barry was responsible for both murals in town, both on the collier and out at the food bank. What else have you underwritten? As well as the brochure that describes all the public art in Ashland. So Barry and I had a conversation yesterday regarding redoing the brochure. But he has some really good experience to talk about with regard to the QR codes and connecting to the website, so you may want to question him on that. So why don't you talk to us first about the brochure?
Okay, so I think you're all familiar with this brochure. If some of you don't have a copy, I brought a few extra. So this was something that was created 3 years ago, maybe. And I just thought it would be a great idea to publicize public art in the community, and because we have tourists here all the time. So this was created by a graphic designer here in town that I know, Molly Ochoa. At my request, and then was approved for printing by the PAC. Then the Chamber of Commerce agreed to distribute them and has been distributing them for the last couple years. There were 5,000 printed, and there's enough left for certainly this year and probably some leftovers for the beginning of next year. But and so what that means is literally thousands of these have been picked up by people. I don't know what they're doing with them, but they pick them up at the information booths, at the plaza, at the Chamber of Commerce, at all of the hotels in town which have card racks. Some of the restaurants have card racks. So I think the City Hall has a card rack. So that's where they go. And I don't know. I haven't seen anybody walking around town doing this, but we certainly see people standing in front of the Guanajuato mural taking pictures. At any rate, it's just a great publicity opportunity for public art, for Ashland, and for the Public Arts Commission. So what I'm here to tell you is that two things about this. One, you know, over time it gets out of date because you have created more public art since this was published. And I think it's got all 23 pieces in here that were done, that were in place at the time that this was done 3 years ago. And you've got new pieces. Secondly, we're going to run out. So if you want to redo this in any way, it's in your hands from here. If you'd just like to make simple changes to this piece, I can put you in touch with Molly Ochoa. I'm sure she would be happy to substitute out some photographs and add some things to the map or whatever you need. And she oversaw the printing of this, which was printed, I think, in Medford. And I think the printer did a great job in producing this. So it's just sort of a reminder that this is coming up and it's something that you might want to think about and put on your agenda if you want to recreate this. Or you can start over and do it in a whole new way or not do it at all. So, you know, this is in your hands. So that's item one. Sandy also asked me to talk about, on the back of this, it has a QR code. Now, if you have a scanner on your phone like I do, you hit that QR code and it takes you somewhere. Where this one takes you is to the city's PAC website, in which all of the artwork is shown, each of the pieces is displayed with information. And that came about simultaneously with this. When I was putting this together, I asked Sandra Slattery at the Chamber if she would loan us Graham Lewis, who is the city's photographer. And so Graham went around and shot photographs of the 23 pieces that are in here. These are all Graham Lewis's photos. Then I asked Sandra if it would be all right to use Graham's photos on the city's PAC website, which you didn't have a website yet. So Ann Seltzer at the city hired somebody to create a website, which is now your website, and posted all those photos with background information on the artist, etc., on the website. So at the same time that this was being done, the website was being done, so there's a connection between them, and what links them is the QR code on the back of this. And this also references, by the way, Southern Oregon's university's walking art tour, because they also have a website that's separate from yours, and they have a lot of art on the university campus as well as the Schneider Museum, which Sandy's involved in. So it's just a great opportunity to increase that connection of, you know, the public with our art, and we're all proud of it, and we're excited about it. So that's that. I do have one other thing to tell you about, but if there's any questions on any of that, I'm here.
Is there any way to track how many people use scan codes?
Scan codes?
Yeah.
You see them in a lot of places, and you might do some research on that. I frankly thought that was going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread when I first saw this, really, because that little box takes you to a wealth of information. It's just incredible. And I think it'll continue to be used more and more because It allows people to be interactive with information.
But there is no, you don't know.
I don't. Yeah,
there should be a way to acquire Google Analytics to find out if somebody gets to a site via the QR code, but someone would have to figure out how to do that. But yeah.
I know that you can. I believe that costs money.
Yeah.
If you have a Google ad, you get all kinds of analytics.
Yeah. Right.
So were we talking about the application of the code in terms of material? Was it you and I who was talking about it, or I can't recall, I might have been talking about it with someone else? Because I know some of your discussion is, what do you do with this? Is it a peel-off sticker that you put on? Did we have that conversation?
We did. So one of the things that, by the way, Sandy gave me a lot of credit. Actually, it's Catherine and I that jointly deserve credit for anything we do. We're a team.
Sorry.
One of the things that we did a few years ago also is that we decided that the university should be a botanical garden. And so if you walk through the university now, you see that over 100 trees have little designations on what that tree is, and also have a little QR code on them. And so that was all done by the landscape department at the university. They created that. We bought them the sign machine. They said, don't buy a sign, buy a sign machine. So that's worked out really well. And the QR codes that they use are, in fact, stickers that they then put in the corner of each of those, and that does the same thing as this. If you scan it, it takes you to the botanical tour website of the university, which tells you which tree you're at. You're at tree number 23, and you can go to tree number 24. You follow this path. So they've got a map and a tour of the university that's connected with that, that was all created at that time. So you could do something similar to that, both with art and as we had been talking about, with other places that you might want to connect in, whether it's historic sites and whatnot. So
I took time yesterday to explain to Barry the concept behind marking excellent places and the four districts and how the process has kind of evolved, and the dilemma over whether QR codes were current and will be current for a while. So that's This is the end result of that. So I don't know if you have any other questions for Barry regarding this.
Yeah. Our particular challenge with the map project is, you put a QR code in bronze, which these will be, there's not enough contrast
right. To
really scan. So then it's a question, do we put a sticker on the bronze, and does that degrade the artistic? I mean, it's just a bit of a dilemma.
You might look at the signage at the university on their trees. The QR code is small. It's probably exactly that big that's on a sign that's probably that big. So, you know, it's small in relation to the signage.
I researched it and took pictures of them and showed the map team how they looked. And I actually downloaded the QR reader and scanned one of the botanical deals and saw what you get from it. And so,
correct.
And I checked with Jim McNamara about. I found out that you had bought the machine that made the plaques, which is very nice of you. Did you order the QR stickers from somebody online? That's just a generic thing.
Mike Oxidine did that when he was at the university. If you want to talk to somebody that really knows how they ran the program, talk to Mike. He's now with Parks and Rec.
Okay.
So he's the expert on that. And there was a deal at the time, and I don't know if the university still stands behind this deal, but we bought the sign-making machine with the caveat that, with student help, they would help out the PAC and the Historic Commission.
Awesome.
Great.
With making
some
signs.
So we can use
signs.
Them.
Yeah.
So, and when the sign... when the sign machine came in, Mike Oxidine gave a demonstration, and I think somebody was there from the PAC, and somebody was there from the Historic Commission, and because it occurred to us that two things. One was that we felt that there were other signage needed for some of our artwork that's not covered, certainly historic sites where we don't have big plaques, but it would be nice to have something of that size. And second, this was even prior to the university's goal of town and gown, Catherine and I kept feeling that there was a need to interconnect the university with the community, and so that was part of that. That was part of our blackmail program.
Yeah,
extortion
is the correct word. Yeah.
Yeah. One more thing about QR codes. Older phones don't recognize a QR code as a QR code, so you just take a picture of it. In fact, even modern, this is a brand new phone. I just tried to scan this, and it took a picture of it, but did not link to the QR code reader, which it should do. So there's a little bit of a technical, it's still, you know.
The app that I have on my phone is called ScanLife.
Yeah, and
and it is a photo
right
kind of thing. And so it shows up like you're going to take a photo of it, but then it immediately goes whoop.
Yeah, and current software, at least on the, is supposed to do that automatically, without having to download an extra app, which you used to have to do. But it doesn't always work, clearly. I just tried it. It's not working.
Is that a free app, or do you know? Is the app free?
It's free. It's called
there, yeah, there's lots of free QR codes.
Free QR code reader.
Yeah.
Is what I got.
So if I could take another 3 minutes with your permission, something occurred that... I really didn't expect, and wanted to share it with you because you may have an interest. About 3 years ago, I initiated a program in Creve-Coeur, Missouri, which is a nice suburb of St. Louis. It's a sculpture on loan program, where the city would actually, instead of purchasing expensive art, you purchase some expensive art, you know what art costs. Instead of purchasing expensive art, they would acquire or designate a location, whether it be a public location, like, let's say, right out in front of this building, or a private location, which would be anywhere downtown where there's somebody's got a setback with a building they own or whatever, that the city would allocate that location with the owner and would then have great pieces of sculpture that would be on loan for 2 years put in that location, and then 2 years later that would rotate out and there'd be another piece. So I started this program in Creve-Coeur 3 years ago and had no idea that this would take off as it has. It's now sweeping across Missouri. There are 14 communities participating in the program. There's over 33 pieces of art, probably millions of dollars worth of art that is on loan from the artist. And so if you're interested, you can connect into this. They are getting inquiries now from other cities and other states on how do you do this. What we set up, it just was serendipitous. I owned a commercial piece of property that was at the front entrance to Creve-Coeur, very similar to where the We Are Here sculpture was carved out of the tree at the entrance to Ashland. So I owned a commercial site like that, and I had this idea of if I give the city, if I create a plaza there and I give that location to the city, could they get art on loan there? And so in the process, we set up all the illegal agreements, the agreements that would be between a private property owner and the city to have that place, the agreements between city and artists so that they could do this contractually two-year agreement. And then they set up their own RFP process as to getting proposals. And the works that they've gotten, these 33 pieces, are from all over the world now. They're not, it started out, it was just going to be local artists. They're from all over the world. They're getting pieces from New York and Mexico and just everywhere that the group that's now running this, which would be like you, selects. So you're in charge of what pieces gets selected. And the artist cannot sell the pieces from that location, but is committed for the two-year period of time that that piece would be there. Obviously, if they get an offer for the piece at the end of 2 years, they sell it. So there's a deal in there for the artist to display the work in a place where it's seen. Somebody might buy it. And if you know artists that do monumental scale work, they've got a backyard full of stuff. And so it's a way of them getting their artwork out there in the world.
So a couple of questions.
Yes.
I don't want to interrupt you if you're not done yet.
I'll just pass these around. This I just saw this. I just pulled this up on the web. This is current. This is an article from a couple of weeks ago on a new work from a New York artist that's in Richmond Heights, Missouri. They call the program Sculpture on the Move. And I wouldn't have even known how successful this had gotten. It was only an accident that I'd even found out. The city of Creve Coeur called me a couple of months ago and said, you have to move the sculpture you loaned us. So I not only provided the site, but I had commissioned about 20 years ago, I had commissioned a great piece from an artist in New Mexico that was sitting in the lobby of my firm that I used to run in St. Louis. And so I asked my ex-partners, I said, would you mind, you know, loaning that piece out for 2 years to the city? And so that was there. So they called me a few months ago and they said, get your sculpture out of there because we got another one coming in. And I said, really? So this is really, you're doing this program? And she said, you have no idea.
Wow.
So the group that's running this has created a stable of artists, a catalog of artists. Where are they pulling are they sending out requests for proposals? What is the mechanics of this program?
They send out RFPs when they have locations. But now that they have more than 17 locations, I'm guessing that they have a pretty revolving program. So I don't know how they're running it. It's being run by a friend of mine in St. Louis who used to be with the Arts and Education Council in St. Louis. And some of the people in the cities, because each of the cities has designated a staff person, which here would have been like Ann Seltzer, has designated a staff person to be in charge of that for the city. So a group of them, I think, have formed this oversight committee to deal with this. But I have nothing to do with that, so I don't know exactly how they're running.
So, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So they there's a committee that curates this artwork, or do they have guest curators? It seems like one thing you might run into if the same group is curating every piece, they kind of all end up looking the same somewhat.
Yeah. And I don't know the answer to that, but, you know, if you want to pursue it, I can put you in touch with them. This article, as I read through it, talks a little bit about the program and not just that particular piece.
How is it underwritten?
Okay, so what they're doing now, originally, I underwrote it. I said, okay, I can loan you the art piece. I can build you a plaza. I can, designate that for you. And, we'll get this program started. And Catherine and I wrote a check. And we said, here's the money to, get this rolling. Everything needs grease to make it roll. So, but that certainly was not the kind of money that they're probably utilizing now. So I'm guessing that either each of these cities has committed a certain budget to doing this, or each of them gets donors to participate in the program. But it's not expensive. I think that they're paying for the insurance of the piece.
Uh-huh.
And they may or may not be paying for the cost of installation. I don't know whether the artist pays that or whether the cities pay that. My guess is it'd be fair for the cities to pay that. They're getting the benefit. So those are the only costs, really, are insurance and installation costs. So whereas you just install a sculpture for $120,000, it probably costs $3,000 to have a piece of artwork for 2 years. I mean, it's minimal cost.
So we try not to have what we call plop art. We try to have, sculpture or pieces that are intrinsic to the city, the site, and so forth. So how do you think they do? You probably have no idea, but I mean, that would be one of the concerns that I think we would talk about is, to bring in a piece of sculpture that has no relationship because it's a gorgeous piece of sculpture. So do you think the city has concerns about that or not necessarily?
I think probably most cities do have concerns about that, and so I don't know how exactly they do that. I do have, and I can give you a copy of this. This is out of the Creve Coeur's Public Art Master Plan, page 22 and 23, and it describes the public art loan program.
Wow, that'd be great.
So I'll give you a copy of that.
Thank you.
Just as a point of data, my phone was able to read this and took me to the website.
Great. So it's just an idea that I thought I'd share with you. I mean, the city already has a lot of public art, 23 pieces plus. There must be 20 pieces at the university. I don't know if you know, Tom.
But I don't know how many.
There's a lot of art on the university campus. So, we've got a lot of art here, which is great, but we're all sitting here because we love art. So, if we can create more art in more places, it's a plus.
You probably said at the beginning of your presentation, but how many of these did you have initially printed?
We originally had 5,000, I believe.
Okay.
So 2.5 years later, are we saying, or 3 years?
Yeah, 2.5 years later, we've probably got
3,000 at least disappear.
Yeah. Yeah, 3,000 or 4,000 are out there, so we've got enough left for this. I got a box at home, so I know we have some left.
Right. Mm.
Tom?
So I was thinking about your question about our loan and some of the benefits that seem to be available through something like that. And one thing I thought of is perhaps a situation where you try something and you're not stuck with. We try something. We try some piece of art whatever we do, and that's what we got. And that's great, because we've put our energy into making sure we're, making a choice. But one of the things that might be considered a benefit out of this program is the notion that, based on what you had said in your question, finding, being able to scan a variety of art and seeing, trying it out, and seeing if something matches a locale that we have in mind, something like that. It seems like it has that possibility. But ultimately, what the conversation seemed to lead to is perhaps we all talk about this, where we have time to just really think about it. Maybe our next meeting we get into it and hash it out.
Any other questions of Barry? Thank you so much for bringing that to us.
Barry, can I have the spelling of your last name?
T-H-A-L-D-E-N.
Thank you.
So Barry is an architect, and his wife, Catherine, is a landscape architect. That's the great combination.
And we're both supposed to be retired.
What's that mean? Thank you again.
All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll limp out of here. I pulled a hamstring, so I managed it.
Take care.
No, bye-bye.
Okay. I think we're up to project updates. That would be Andy.
I prepared pictures and schematics and stuff, which, depending on whether you guys want to take the time to look at those or not, I'll leave it up to you. I'll make it as brief as I can, and if you want more, there is more. We've agreed on 5 locations for the plaques. Dale Shostrom, the chair of Historic, has gotten concrete bids on those locations, and with the install and everything, it's looking good that we're under our $22,000 budget. Haskins Garage is one of the proposed locations, and the owner of that business there, Revive, expressed her concerns about how the installation might affect her summer business. So she appeared at the last meeting, and we talked with her about that. It went very well. We were able to put her concerns at rest and open channels of communication with her. I think everything's fine. We have been kicking the can around repeatedly on whether we want to directly commission Masterworks plaques or whether we do an RFQ or RFP. I asked for a vote. I recommended directly commissioning Masterwork plaques. The vote was unanimous. We began to proceed that direction. Dale had, once Adam Hanks heard that we are direct commissioning, he advised us that we might get into trouble by doing that, even though it is within our purview to directly invite somebody. So I brought that forward, and Dale wanted to at least talk to Resolve Architecture, who did the plaques in Chinatown. Swen Ho was the person that designed those. So he opened up a communication with her, and she said, "I've put together a team. She's interested in the project." Dale now feels that it's not a turnkey process the way Masterworks is. So we, after all of that, we're back to the concept of directly commissioning Masterworks.
Any other question? Who might you run into trouble with? Just the artistic community here, or
public perception?
That it wasn't a broad enough reach locally, or right. Or not a reach locally at all,
right.
Or
I've made the point repeatedly that I felt like this was the beginning of a large scale project, that it's important to get it off on the right foot. Masterworks plaques provides everything from design through an installation guide. Since they are new in New York, installation wouldn't be done by them, but we have Dale has sought out the city and concrete contractors to deal with this, and we feel like we're in line with how that needs to happen. So rather than going through other places that may come up with a design, and then we start searching out foundries, yes, and it turns into a multi vendor process where we felt Masterworks offers everything from start to finish with a high-quality product.
We did emphasize the fact that when we do commission the central sculpture for these five sites, that absolutely would be an open process available to local artists. But the plaques themselves are more of a graphics project in a way, not really. So,
So Masterworks would it be designing the plaques?
Design and fabricate. That's what's so desirable. And their level of experience and examples all over the U.S. Did you guys talk about possibly nipping that concern in the bud with an article initially in the paper or public about why Masterworks, in order to set a template to help possibly in future projects, since this is a multi-phase project, it seems to me we could get ahead of that concern if we get something out there saying this is a bench, not, probably shouldn't say a benchmark, but a guide so that it could help local people know how the process works so that they would be able to apply for future projects. Something like that. I think we should go for it, personally.
Yeah, I can answer all those questions, and actually a lot of that's in the bullet points that I made here.
Okay.
I have created a list of rationale why. We have not talked about publishing that in a newspaper article. I circulated my list of rationale to the group and asked them for opinions, additions, whatever, that has not been added to yet. We talked about having that rationale included with the contract for public record, but having it ready to go in terms of a public news article is certainly a possibility. The public at this point doesn't know even anything about the project other than the presentation that I made to the parks, which is public record. There's a video of it. You know, people want to search for it. So the plan was not to do an RFP, not to do an RFQ, go directly with Masterworks' plan. Fotini said she would start writing the contract for it based on basically four sets of documents that describe the narratives, the pictures, the schematics that Historic wants to see, as well as site locations. And then we found out from Dave Lohman, the city attorney, that he advised us that you do need to have an RFP. And I had been pointing this out for quite a while, that how can you ask Masterwork Plaques for a contract when you're not specifically spelling it out what it is that you're asking of them. And so it's been a frustrating process because I've have continually gone back to this point and am told that no, it'll be a contract and Fotini wants to do it. So this is now on a different track. So the RFP needs to be written, and with Sandy's help, you're working on templates, I understand. So I will do my best to convert the work that we've done on the RFQ into an RFP. Once I get that going, I'll run it past Sandy. Once we feel that's ready to go, I'll assemble the map team again and run it past them, and we'll try and move forward.
Can I interrupt just a moment to clarify? The value of the RFP is to get a fixed price on the scope of work that you are at now, which is totally different from the scope of work that they priced out initially. Now, the pricing may be the same because it seems as though they have a, you know, three sets of design reviews and so forth. They have a whole system for doing this. But until you have that piece of information of how much they're going to charge, you know, it's hard to write a contract. So that was really the underwriting thing that I kept driving for doing an RFP.
Also worth noting is that once the RFP exists, it could be posted online. It could be, we could go back to inviting people and sidestep this whole rationale for direct commission. It would be, yet again, kicking it around, but once the RFP exists, it would be a simple thing. And so, reluctantly, I feel like once I have the RFP finished, I will present that to the team again as an option.
If we were to post the RFP online, how long does it need to be posted before we award the?
You could make that decision.
So we could just say we'll put it up for a month, and if we get no other applicants, then we can just go for it.
Correct.
Okay, so in reviewing the content, and this is the stuff that I can share with you if you'd like to take the time. As Sandy said, the way that the designs are starting to look is probably very different than what you initially talked to Jennifer about. So I contacted her and said, "Hey, you know, I'd like to check in with you and find out whether our expectations, our ideas, are even in line with what your initial estimates were, and if this is even, if your initial estimates even cover this sort of thing." Dale is wanting to see these things in more of a collage style, accurate photo representation of the buildings. Historic feels that if the sites aren't accurately representing the historic content, what's the point of doing it? So this is a definitely a difference of opinion between our committees, where public art, it was initially, your concept was that these would be artistic plaques, and historic said, well, what's the point of doing it if it's not historic? So, you know, we compromised with them on that and said, yeah, I can see the point in that. We want them to be well done. It's got to look good. We don't want it to look hokey. And when the point comes around to the hub sculptures, yeah, I'm going to expect the reciprocal. I gave you guys the historical accuracy on this. You're going to have to back off on the contemporary ideas of the sculpture and meet me halfway.
Right. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
right.
Have they responded? Have you said that to them?
Yeah.
Okay. And what was their response to?
Well, we have yet to start talking about the hub sculpture, so in theory, it's fine.
Right.
We'll see. This project is a bit of a powder keg. I feel like it could blow up pretty much at any moment, and the $22,000 could just go away. There's nothing guaranteed about this project moving forward.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I pushed Jennifer in the first place when I was still back on Historic Commission was that, in fact, so many of her examples, if you look at them, all around the United States, are exactly what Dale and Terry are asking for. They are collages of historic posters and photographs and buildings and people. They're exactly that, and it was, in fact, if I'm recalling, again, I've been out of the loop for so long now, I'm kind of having to dig it back out, but their least expensive version was primarily exactly what they're asking for. And yet, because of her graphic skills, I just don't understand why they're still balking, because that's exactly what she does,
We're waiting for her response on how she feels that this content will work with what she wants to shape. One of the things that's really awesome about her is she is so approachable.
Yeah,
as she's a super nice lady and very open. Responds promptly when I've asked her stuff. And I said, you know, the initial estimates that you gave us expired at the end of 2018. What might we expect the current cost to be? Within 24 hours, she wrote back and said, we'll honor the 2018 prices. How can you argue with that? And I asked her, I said, well, now we're also considering, initially I said that we would be looking at medallions. She's already suggested that based on the architectural content of the plaques, that rectangles or squares would frame better with buildings. Mm-hmm. So that's all.
And that's a little less expensive.
Actually, surprisingly not. The medallions are cheaper.
Oh, really? But well, I guess it's, yeah, it's less acreage.
One of the, on the initial quotes, they were rectangles, and we were at, we asked for an update with a 2 foot by 2 foot square.
Oh.
Dale worked out a per square foot price on it, of course.
Yeah.
Being Dale. A contractor.
Well, we saw the how nice the Swen Ho ones were, which were squares.
They're very organic.
Yeah.
And she's interested in the Chinatown aspect. Mm-hmm. Being Chinese, she's mm-hmm. interested in the railroad aspect. She's working on a railroad project for the front of OMSI, which might even have a turntable on it.
Oh, nice.
She's also working on a big, huge project for Astoria, something to the tune of $11 million. So she's, you know, she's high-powered.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think she's a great person to reserve for the invitation to the hub sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Does she do that kind of work? Okay.
Yeah. They have examples on Resolve Architecture's webpage.
Okay.
So I didn't want to burn up the contact with her asking for prices on plaques when we decided we want to use Masterworks. So I really kind of wanted to keep that one hidden. Dale really wanted to talk to her. I said, well, just do it in a way. He said, what's the harm in just asking for a price? And I said, well, the harm is I don't want to burn up that contact. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give her a false sense of a job. And so it was kind of a surprise that she came back with such enthusiasm saying, I've put together a team. It's a separate foundry in Bend. It's complicated. But when it gets down to the hub sculpture, I would really like to invite her to it. On the technical considerations of the QR codes, Barry was absolutely right. We've been kicking around two ideas for the plaques, and one would be, since a QR code cast in bronze won't read and it'll fill up with debris and stuff, it's just not a good idea. And Jennifer said, that's a horrible idea. I said, well, what about working into the design of a small square placeholder for a sticker? And that's a possibility. I was just up in Salem looking at the World War II memorial that's just outside of the Capitol. They have a lot of plaques in the ground, and all of them have a little plastic vinyl sticker on them. And it detracts from the beauty of it. So that's the problem there. My suggestion was to reserve the QR code stickers for the plaque that apparently now we could have made locally from this machine, which would be awesome. But reserve the QR code for the hub sculpture plaque that describes what that is. It would, the walking tour of looking at the plaques would miss that. Unless you went to the hub sculpture first and saw the QR code, you wouldn't get the other information.
Yeah, the other idea was to purchase a short URL that is somehow, I think we came up with a few examples, Map Ashland or is available. We have to find one, because with the QR code, yeah, you need the QR code, but you also need the URL. You really need to have both. And the current URL that takes us to the Arts Commission site is way too long.
Yeah.
So we would have to, and I think that if we want to do that, we need to reserve that URL. It's pretty inexpensive. 10 years was $200, something like that, through GoDaddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So And, you know, I wanted to say one more thing about the Historic Commission and the give and take. I mean, we're not the only ones that compromise. I mean, Terry Skibbe wanted paragraphs. And we said 100 characters. That's what we've got, and that's is kind of what we've stuck to, right?
No.
Is it 100?
It's 150.
150 characters, yeah. So.
So, you know, I feel that the medallions should be timeless. I don't think a URL belongs on that, because what if 200 years?
No, I'm not saying on bronze. Part of the sticker needs to have a URL.
Oh, it's only a sticker. Okay, yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I just something. When we're casting things in bronze, that's forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows what 100 years from now will look like. So that's my recommendation. Leah, her last name I think is Richards, gave us a presentation on GIS, which is Geographic Information Systems. And that on the handout that Barry sent out, that's the walking art tour is part of that. There's also one that's on Lithia Park, and I gave you.
I have a computer here available.
Okay. So it's up to you guys if you want to take the time to look at the examples of how this could pan out into that. The last item, the hub sculpture. The location in Railroad Park was approved by Parks and Rec. I see that that phase of the project being a year or two away.
That's the picture you started with that was up there before?
I don't know. I had my back to that.
So these are this is the PowerPoint you gave me.
Okay.
I also have the PDF available.
So, okay, thanks. So this is the site locations, and the chalk markings are proposed locations. There's going to have to be sidewalk demo in order to get these done. Apparently, A Street is possibly going to be redone and the sidewalks redone, and I think they said 2022, although it's not a sure thing. So we felt like, well, you know, how much of this, how carried away with this do we really want to get? Dale pointed out that you see all these cracks. That's because the control joints weren't frequent enough. So these proposed lines are control joints that would be put in. This is the proposed location for the medallion describing Railroad Park. The grassy area beyond is the site that Parks granted us permission for the potential hub sculpture. Next. This is in front of the Railroad Depot building at the bottom of 5th and A. This is a sidewalk entryway to the east side of the building. We're talking about putting it right in the middle. There, here, there's another control joint. So we're talking about taking out part of this and having it go here. Next. Same thing. So it's a question of whether it's here or here.
Depending on the sidewalk reconstruction kind of
thing. Exactly, and also depending on whether it's square or round. We were waiting for Jennifer's suggestions on, from an artistic standpoint, of how that would work. Next. This is in front of Haskins Garage, and you can see the owner's concerns. In the summer, she has the door open, and she doesn't, and she gets furniture deliveries. We've been by 3 or 4 times. She says, "What's going on? You guys keep coming back." So this color is buff, and it's apparently is a new city requirement for the color of concrete. So when we're talking about replacing part of this, so this is going to be buff, and then this stays the same. It looks like a hodgepodge. So, you know, we're talking about having to replace a larger section, and that's where a little involvement with the city going, we kind of need to work together on this, and Dale is feeling that out with Public Works on that. So here, once again, we're kicking around ideas, whether it's a medallion or whether it's a square, and how it should be oriented, where the narrative would go. All that stuff's just really just at the beginning, and we're going to need to rely on Jennifer's advice on that. Again, you can see that.
Too bad the meter box is right there.
Yeah. But you can see what needs to happen.
Did you alleviate her concerns by telling it that once it starts, it'd be a fast process?
Yes.
And it isn't going to happen this summer. We're not there yet.
No.
You know, it'll be off season.
No, we figured it would probably be a 2-day deal. She's open every day of the year, but September, October, you know, I mean, you don't want to necessarily do install concrete work in the middle of winter, so we'll have to work that out, but the vibes are good right now, so that's great. So this is the edge of Chinatown. There was a man, Hua Chung, who had a grocery here, and it's a far cry from the house that's there now, but you can see what we're thinking about here, and once again, lots of control joints to keep the concrete from cracking. We felt a diagonal placement of a square would be ideal there. Next. Another view of it.
And is that 24 by 24?
24.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
When you were talking about the city wanting to use this buff concrete, and then there's some older, I don't know exactly what it was, what that was that you're pointing out, the other.
Yeah.
And now I'm seeing, like, these past two pictures, it looks like there's some difference between what you're drawn on, and then the next section, perhaps.
Oh, it's newer.
It's
all different.
Yeah, it's all different.
So my question is this. In the event that things move forward, it's not just the installation of the plaque. Is it the whole piece of concrete that will need to be addressed based on the city's standards for their new standards?
Yeah, it's a site-by-site consideration. Apparently, there is some difference of opinion in whether the buff thing, it really has to be done that way. We are prepared to do the buff color in front of Haskins. Dale said that these other ones can match this kind of concrete. So, yet to be determined.
So that comment earlier was specific to A Street or something? Is that, or to that section?
Specific to the stuff in front of Haskins for right now.
Okay.
Obviously, it would look horrible to start piecing in buff concrete in areas that are old, especially when there's the potential for it all to be ripped up in 2 years anyway.
Okay.
So the Public Works said, you know, yeah, if you guys install it now and in 2 years we wind up ripping it up, we'll take care of resetting them. These are back channel casual conversations. Next, please. Another view of that. And then I think there's one more. This is in front of the co-op. This concrete is relatively new. Dale's idea was to install concrete into this area and have a round medallion be in that center and not affect the existing sidewalk. You wouldn't have to do the demo. I think it's a great idea. I think this, I'm not sure whether this is city property. I believe it is. Not sure whether we have to talk to the food co-op about that or not.
Probably should. Just because.
One of the things that was really brought front and center with Stacy's concerns about her business on 4th is that we do need at some point as this moves forward to contact the property owners. Okay. And one of the first things I did in the first week that you started talking about the project was I researched who the property owners were for the site, so I've got that list ready to go when the time is right. And that's the last slide on the proposed installation.
No, there's two more.
Oh, there are? Okay.
That's the last slide.
Okay. And then there's a PDF that I have of what Historic has given me. It's not an all-inclusive collection of the photos, but it'll give you an idea of where they're going. And also, we have the titles. Could you back up, please?
I'm not sure how you want me to present this because it's, I mean, to make it big enough, how would you like me to do it?
Oh, that's great.
Okay.
This is Peter Finkel, who does Walk Ashland. There's an article in the Tidings that he does, is writing the narratives. So he's completed that. If you scroll down, these are...
Oh, cool. I've never seen that one.
That's the roundhouse.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the roundhouse was down at the railroad?
It's on the other side of the tracks.
Got it.
And this is the cathedral, much like what's in behind the band shell in Olympia Park. Keep going.
So yeah. These are all candidates for the first medallion?
Yes.
Or
correct.
Yes.
Or some combination there.
Inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, and now down. That would be rather difficult to translate to a plaque. But you get the real feel of just how popular this was. I mean, it's awesome. And then further down, please.
Flash mob.
And this is kind of interesting because this would be 7th Street. So right down here is where the proposed hub sculpture would be. Here's the medallion. That's 7th, 6th, 5th. The depot would be right about here. I think that would be a very difficult thing to include on a plaque, but they want it for reference.
It might work as a more graphic map, though. She's done some great stuff with maps.
Yeah,
rather than an aerial photograph just translated into a map.
Okay, and then down, please.
That title, that is an interesting role. Our boys are on the way to get the Kaiser.
Okay, then these buildings are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So I can see that working really well in a plaque. So you're 144
characters. Nice way, a really nice, tight-knit little narratives.
Yeah, Peter did a nice job.
Yeah.
And then further down, please. Being a painting contractor, I was immediately drawn to these guys are risking their life and limb.
Yeah, right.
Where's OSHA when you need it? further down, please.
Are these exhibited anywhere, Andy?
These are part of Terry Skibbe's collection,
right.
Which there'll be a dedication to him at the Hannon Libraries soon. I'm not sure whether they'll be displaying those at Schneider or in the library, but you run into these occasionally downtown places.
Right.
Okay, down, please. Another great choice, and you can definitely see what Jennifer's talking about, how a square would frame these things better than a medallion would. And down, please. this is first thing we wanted to know, oh my God, is that flypaper?
Yeah, I think that is.
Hope not.
Definitely looks like it.
It's cryptic.
It's awfully big for flypaper.
Anyway, it's a great picture. I'm not sure how that really, whether that
was commissioned by the Arts Commission back then.
Right. Well, I think the main idea initially was to present lots of photographs to the artist and let them choose what they could work with, but they needed the feel. This
exactly.
is background
exactly.
info.
So, yeah. And there's, this was, the pictures that I included on this were the first wave. They're not all inclusive as we scroll up, please. Down further on. Okay, so then here we get to Haskins. talk about a concise thing. 1908 building was the second fire station in Ashland. It also held jail space to deal with hobos who
came on the street.
Nice. But that does. There's the jail.
That's the window.
So the back of the fire station, a little tiny room.
Yep.
So they have some more. These are the only two pictures that I had at the time of Haskins. And down, please. Okay, so here's Watchung's family. And one of the options for Jennifer's plaques was there was style A that was not 3D. There was style B, which was minimal 3D. And then style C was the most expensive, and it was a hand sculpture. And something like this would be really... really ripe for that sort of treatment. One of the nice things that we liked about Masterworks plaques is that there are options, squares, medallions, different kinds of reliefs, and it's all under her roof, and it would all be dealt with creatively depending on what the site required. So I think this is awesome. There's down. This was the Chinese workers working on the tunnel. So that I cannot see that translating into design worthy stuff at all. But it is, you know, background content for them. Yeah, please. The last one is the Twin Plunges, and that's a... Would that be perfect on a plaque or what?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It seems like that's very much in line with what the examples from Masterworks looks like already. And down, please.
Well, that's about when I was swimming there.
And again, please.
It'd be late 40s.
Okay, so here we get to... Dale has opinions about the way that the photos are arranged, and they really pushed for wanting a collage style effect on these plaques. And this is where it began to get out of the scope of what I think Jennifer's initial ideas might have been. So I'm waiting to have a conversation with her. This PDF is what I sent to her. So these are suggestions. They're not... Dale realizes he's not a graphic artist. He doesn't pretend to be. They just feel strongly that they want the accuracy represented.
Well, she does collage. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of collage style work. So I would trust that she can put something together. You know, she's a real pro.
Yeah. She's had this for a week, so I'm surprised I haven't heard back from her yet, but I expect she's giving it careful consideration and it'll be worth the wait.
I was going to call her when I was in New York, but I was sick the whole time and I just didn't get in touch.
One of the things that immediately struck me was, okay, you want the yin-yang?
Yeah.
Do that one for the Watchung plaque. Anyway, that's page one. Page two is more examples. So here on this Watchung one, he's got, there's a lot of a lot of photos, and I see that as getting pretty complicated where just a family picture in the middle.
Right.
We also want consistent borders. The narratives that will go in them, it's up for grabs at this point, whether the narratives go around the edge. I felt that was clunky because you're going to do this to read it. You know, it seemed to me that it should be just, you know, a chunk down on the bottom. But, you know, once again, that's all up to the recommendations of the layout artist. And that's my presentation.
Good job.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks.
Wow. How far you've come.
Yeah,
it
really got
it going.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. Any questions of Andy before we move forward? Comments? Applause?
Applause for
lots
sure.
Of applause.
Yeah. Okay. Council liaison, Stephen.
So I continue to scratch my head on how I should do this and how I should be, because it's really hard to give a purely objective report on the council without injecting, you know, on some of these hot button issues. So unless somebody really objects, I'm going to try to stay somewhat objective, but I'm not going to shy away from without editorializing a little bit. You can probably tell by the look on my face and my inflection and so on and so on. So the thing we're wrestling with now is budget. Budget, 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 which makes a lot of people glaze over. I remember before I got involved in this, the budget, you'd read about article and paper, roll somebody. Yes, sir?
I'm going to go ahead and interrupt you. Are you basically saying you're going to feed us a redacted version? Just putting it clear on that.
It's a submarine.
Okay, sorry.
Right. Please don't frog mark me out here in hand. Usually glaze over when it comes to budget items and taxes and so on and so on, but we're deep into it now. Ashland is unique in many respects. It's also, it continues to be unique relative to this thing that we call the Citizens Budget Committee. Most towns in Oregon, in fact, probably 95% of the towns in Oregon don't have nearly as active a budget group. I ascribe that to the level of education in this community, and a lot of folks have way too much time on their hands. So they really dig into this thing. The city administration finance director comes forward with a recommendation to balance the budget. And then the budget committee, which is made up of all councilors plus the mayor at 7, and then 7 at-large folks from the community are appointed for 4-year terms. Now, some of the folks are quiet and thoughtful and contribute in a constructive way, and there are definitely some bomb throwers, and it's a interesting group to have be part of. So the budget committee makes recommendations. The problem with the budget committee in Ashland is they have a tendency to get out of their lane. They get out of their box. They have a really very small mandate as far as what they can recommend, but they want to dig into FTEs, and they want to dig into how the fire department is staffed, and whether the police department has 1.5 FTEs or 2 FTEs downtown, and so on, which is really not in the purview of the budget committee. It's a city council, but it's really in the purview of the fire chief and the police chief. We give them a budget and operate, and then we expect a certain level of service. So anyway, it makes for long meetings. It makes for going down rabbit holes that get voted down 13-2, for instance, many times. But we have to let that process go forward and so on and so on. So we're down to 600,000. We've whacked, and we hope to have finished it last Wednesday. The day before yesterday, but we didn't quite get to it. So we've got 600,000 more to yes, sir, yeah, ma'am.
What does that mean, we're down to 600,000?
600,000 to cut. Yeah, we had roughly 2 million to cut.
Wow.
We're down to 600,000.
Because of you cut 1.4 million without problems, or at least without.
Well,
we agreed on the 1.4.
You missed the box of hankies at the directory.
Right. And realistically, I think there's some people on the budget committee, I'm going to editorialize here, that would almost be happy to see somebody packing up their file box and walking out of here in tears.
Yeah.
With a pink slip.
Yeah.
that's the kind of cuts that they want to see because they feel that we're overspending and blah, 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 blah. We, in my opinion, we have the town. There's efficiency to be gained everywhere, but to gain $2 million, you know, to feel that the city is being run with a $2 million cushion of extravagance is just flat wrong. It isn't being run like that. So you know, we're getting to it. One of the questions, big questions, is do you do a whole bunch of little tiny cuts?
Death by a thousand cuts,
or do you start? You know, there was one proposal on the table the other day to completely whack the conservation department, which is all the water conservation, the solar, our relationship with Bonneville Power, and all that, and you know, it went down hard on a vote. People aren't going to do that, and so anyway, the other big dilemma from a budget standpoint, you have the revenue side and you have the expenditure side. And do you cut expenditures or do you, I love the euphemism, enhance revenue, which means increasing fees or increasing taxes and so on. There's a certain constituency that's developed in this town that I don't care if the utility bill is raised by $1.50, they are against it. You know, just that knee-jerk reaction against any fee increase because they feel it's the camel's nose under the tent and give them an inch, they're going to take a mile and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, that's the budget. One of the suggestions I relative to the idea of putting out an article on this project right now, I would lay low in the tall grass on public art.
Shut
right
up.
Now. It's like, so far that hasn't come up because it's not a big expenditure, but you know, the 23 or 25, you know, whatever we get from the TOT is, just lay low on that one. Just till after this, you know, we're going to be done in June. And then we can, you know, carry on with, raise our heads up and carry on with our.
Do they not realize that it is a section of funds that cannot be touched for general maintenance?
No, yeah, no. See, that's the thing that comes up with the budget committee. There was somebody who offered up a deal of privatizing an electric company. Electric is an enterprise fund. It funds itself. You know, we're in general fund. General fund is where the big problem is. So anyway, that's probably it on budget, unless anybody had any specific questions about.
So the people that want to cut, do they talk about level of service and what they're willing to accept a decrease in level of service or not? They want to.
Well, there was a suggestion of whacking $700,000 out of planning and building. And so Manning was very articulate about that. Well, she said, this is what it looked like. We probably cut 5 to 6 positions out of, you know, like that. So a builder would come in and have a foundation ready for inspection. We wouldn't have inspectors anymore. We would have to, by state law, that would flip over to have a state inspector who would be located in Salem.
Yeah.
And would come down here on occasion. So you got a foundation ready to go. Be about 3 weeks before we can get to that.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean that's a reality. Plan check, and then any kind of long-term planning,
right.
Urban growth boundary stuff, all the things that we value, back to level of service again,
right.
All the things that we value that makes this town great is would come into
yeah.
question.
Actually, I did have a question regarding the budget. I know a lot of government entities are struggling with the PERS.
Right.
Is Ashland different than other towns?
No. We continue to get whacked. Everybody.
That's my impression.
Everybody.
But
has
we're
to
more
pay.
In the press about it. It seems to me than many. Maybe because we have this budget committee that fights against.
Yeah,
different
absolutely.
Concepts.
But there was a conversation with Rich Rosenthal and Kelly and myself the other day that Rich is involved in Bedford because he's parks director over there, and he says sitting in a budget process over there is like night and day compared to over here. We have a degree of contention that was introduced. Oh, probably 20 years ago, there was a group in that started the process of the contentious situation, you know, that were overspending and so on and so on. So anyway, it's we're going to get through it. And we always have a balanced budget. I think we have some great people on staff here, and we'll get through it. But it's an agony at this point, and. Okay, real quick, real high points is coming up the camera discussion. That's coming down the pike. We have a study session on the 3rd of June.
Terrific.
Where that's going to, the legal aspects and the possibilities, the pros and cons are going to be presented in a study session, a general, not specific to velocity, but just a general cameras, surveillance cameras in town. And I think that we're on our way to some kind of a policy that, because it's, you know, the other one is a hot button that's coming down Pike and Patrick. It's I'm going to be out of town for a week, so I'm not going to be able to vote on it. But I don't think it's going to be a close vote. Is the whole failure to provide your name and date of birth is an issue that some of you heard about. So I don't know exactly the background, but that there was this, in the past. It was required that if you're being cited, you've got to provide your, or there's probable cause that you're going to be cited, you got to provide your name and date of birth to a peace officer. Somehow, in the course in Oregon, that law was kicked out for some kind of language, some kind of civil rights, Fourth Amendment, search and seizure language. It's never been fixed, but municipalities can now have their own regulation in the city that requires that if you're being cited, you are required. What's happening downtown is people don't give their name and date of birth, and then they get repeated citations, and they don't know who they are, and they just tear stuff up and so on. So that's coming before the council. There's a constituency in town that feels, and I kind of understand it, but I think we need to do this, is that it's going to be, there was some bad misinformation put out on National Peace by a certain counselor that said it was going to allow the police to do random, to stop Andy on the street because he's kind of scruffy looking and ask for his name and his date of birth. Well, right. If Andy's got an open container, then that's going to be a legitimate requirement. But if he's just walking down the street, but it was put out on National Peeps that we were going to have jackbooted thugs, cops running around rousting people because of their personal appearance and so on. That's absolutely not the case. Chief Romero, who I think some of you know, is an excellent police chief for this town, and he is not going to institute anything like that or allow his officers to do anything like that. So anyway, that one's coming down the pike, and it's going to be voted on Tuesday. And there's lots of other stuff, but nothing of really, you know, important to certain constituencies. But as far as this body here is concerned, we're kind of weaving our way through the process here. Because the economic development money really comes under, and the TOT and unrestricted funds and all that kind of stuff really, really becomes a target. And
what other requests are there for distribution of TOT funds?
Boy. So I sat on the ECTS committee, which is the Economic, Cultural, Tourism, and Sustainability, which are the four classes, where we distribute $230,000 from the TOT tax to 34 different applicants. Now, some of them, not all of them get the money, but they get, and it's everything from the film festival to the Schneider Art Museum to School of the Farm. I mean, there's a whole list of folks, and then we have to sit down, the four or five of us, and just got through that, divvying up that money based upon criteria and so on and so on and so on. So anyway, that's where some of that TOT money goes to.
Does that happen just once a year that you allocate that?
Right. The budget's a biennium, but we allocate once a year. There's also something on the table next year to whack that money and kick it back into the unrestricted. So
remind me where that money comes from.
Transit occupancy tax, which we know is a hotel. Yeah.
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 Steve, do you have any idea on when the submission deadline is for that? Because if our plaque project moves on for the next set of five, it's my understanding that we would be asking for a chunk of that money to move forward.
Right. February, March is generally when that's done. And there's notifications all over the webpage on that. Okay. I'm sure there'll come.
I'm not sure it's that money. It's coming out of the city budget. I don't think it's coming out of TOT. that we're talking about. For instance, the 22,000 that we have now, that same resource, which is not DOT, I don't believe.
That wasn't that beautification?
That was beautification, and then Fotini said that that has been changed, but it's all it's part of that.
Part of the DOT.
It is part of the DOT.
Because there's a restricted and there's unrestricted. And
because it was called something else. It was called City Something Funds. So I...
City Capital Funds.
Right. So I took a different understanding of it, but you think it's from DOT?
I believe
ultimately,
so.
I think it is.
I'm pretty sure
that was
it's from DOT.
Thank you.
The one last thing I'll say about budget is... I'm prepared to make a proposal to increase the meals tax by the meals tax at 5%. If we increase the meals tax by 1%, that would give us our $600,000, and boom, just like that. I don't get heartburn over over increasing the meals tax because the large majority of people who would be paying that would people come from out of state who are used to paying 9% and 10% in sales tax alone. And I don't. That doesn't give me heartburn.
Steve, are you preparing? Are you suggesting it as a one time, 1 year, or one?
No, it would just be. It would increase the. Now the meals tax comes up for renewal every 5 years, I think. And I think we voted it in. I think we continue to vote it in, but it's got a limit of 7%, I think. But no, I mean we need a dedicated funding stream to run. You know, we do this year to year thing, and we're just always on this patchwork quilt and soft money and all that kind of thing.
So. Sneak preview will come out against it.
Oh yeah.
So is this something that you can implement without voter?
Yes, can be
approval.
Can be, but once again, the constituency is out there that doesn't want to increase anything because they feel the city needs to live within its means.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's a philosophical difference.
Okay. You're going to need rain jackets the day that you guys talk about that in front of everybody.
I know.
All right. Any questions of Steve? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to the work plan. working with Richard and Jeff, we have one RFQ template, one RFP template for design, and we need one more RFP template for product, as in medallions. So those will be done and sent to you for your feedback before the next meeting. Okay. We've spent time pulling from a variety of resources to get the best wording, to be the most inclusive, but we may have missed information, and we're happy to have feedback on those.
Question, please?
Yeah.
Would my part in working on the RFP for the plaques be delayed? Do you see that being delayed by a month?
Yeah. So one is a template. One is a document that you're going to be using right now. The templates are just for the use of future packs, so that you don't have to go back and look at an old RFQ and say, "Oh, how can we move this around and make this work?" It's really just a clear template. You fill in this, you fill in that, you know. Short answer, no. I'm working on the RFP that you can use very soon.
Okay.
Tom, just give us an update on where you are with the presentation.
Well, you and I have been back and forth with fine-tuning what we want this to look like in a general sense and how we want it to play out. Where we're at now, I think, now that we kind of think we can go forward with the design, is working through what would represent certain concepts the best. And we've narrowed down some images. I don't have any images for you right now. We've narrowed down some images for specific concepts that we want played out through this presentation. I don't got a, just a few more. I mean, there might be something like a couple dozen concepts.
Yeah. I have the list right.
Okay,
So we kind of redid the strategy that we were using before, and the template that we're using now has two headings. What is public art? And there's a definition of it: art in any medium planned, executed with the intention of being staged in the physical public domain accessible to all. And there's a category for permanent and there's a category for temporary. Then we move on to why public art. Art is used for a variety of purposes. And then we have quite a list: protest, deliver a message, instill pride, stimulate discourse, introduce social ideas, bring creative energy into a space, provoke inspiration, provoke engagement, add uniqueness, and so on. Then there's celebration of nature and culture. Then there's start conversation about humanitarianism, social issues, local identity. Then there is reflect on local history, human consciousness, connectivity, humor, playfulness, assist in revitalizing areas and abandoned spaces and transforming spaces. So this is kind of the list that we're working off of and looking for images to connect to these short phrases, and then probably going to inquire of Steve Jensen if he's still up for working on some of the narratives that go with this. So it's pretty simple and straightforward now, but I think it, you know, in talking with Tom about this, I think it's a presentation that will be easily understood by groups to whom we present, and it illustrates this wide scope of what public art plays into.
If I can make another comment relative to that, Stephen, when we get to a point where we are really ready to now marry the dialogue with images, where we're getting these images and why they work sometime, well, for the most part, there is some information that would come with an image which would help define why that image, or not that image, but why that piece of art was chosen, or what's it relative to in a certain community, or what's it supposed to be doing. That kind of information would be helpful, I would think. It would help me. I mean, there were times when I was looking at images going, oh, that's really interesting. And then I'd read about it, and I'd go, wow. You know, so we could not just, what I'm getting at is we can provide images relative to these concepts, but we're planning on also having some bits of information relative to the art, so that whatever that dialogue ends up being, there's something to go to, you know.
Right.
You know, that we provide.
I would see my role simply as an editor, just tightening up. So if you wanted to drop a narrative in there with information, I would be the one that would, just very similar to Finkel here. I mean, it wouldn't be quite as tight as that, I would think, but it'd be in consultation with you guys. But you know, just strictly the English teacher tightening, you know, and assuming this is, it's a narrative, correct? I mean, there's going to be voice.
That's the whole thing. We probably will. Who knows? But I think the thought was that we're not going to have much narrative on the screen, that it's going to be images,
right,
and it's going to be conversational presentation. So at this point, I think that's the direction we're going. So, yes, that would work really well.
Right. But when in the PowerPoint, with each individual slide, would be a lot of information that would be taken out.
Oh, yeah.
Of the slide,
oh, yeah.
What it would give me, whether it be a subsidiary document or something that I can marry the two.
Exactly. Yep, that'd be work wonderfully.
How many categories do you have there? It sounds like it's getting much longer.
Oh, yeah, it is, but it's really hard to find images or pieces that go with that. So this is just like you know, if we can get 10 in there and there's a good variety, we'll do it. But that was where we were starting from. Any other comments? We're working on this next week, so we should have something good in June for you. Okay, so following the installation of...
Velocity?
No. God, hither.
Threshold.
What is the name
threshold.
Of the...
Threshold.
Threshold, thank you. Threshold had two names, and it's like... anyway, following the conclusion of that, or the installation of that, we found there to be just kind of a soft letdown. There was no point at which we did some kind of an evaluation and then said to City Council, it's met this, it's met that, or internally we knew that it's met all of this, and then when we recommended that they adopt it into or pull it into the city public art collection, you know, it was just really loosey-goosey. So there was a there were comments made on our wrap-up review that we should formalize a final review process, and we have one for the mural guideline, which I will read you in a second. And also, as part of that particular sculpture, there were some surprises in terms of the finish on the piece at the end, and we actually did a little teleconference visual with Susan at the fabricator, and she was kind of up in the air. She was still drying out finishes, and we kind of let that go and let her finish it up without our saying, so what's your conclusion, and yes, we're good with that, or no, we're not good with that. So by the time it arrived in Ashland, we were a little surprised. The finish was not as it was initially presented on the drawings that she gave us, or did it? It did not meet our expectation. So,
what were the differences exactly?
The fabricator was in Utah, I'm remembering, inside in a big 20-foot warehouse space with lighting that I have no idea what it was, but it certainly wasn't outside lighting. So she wanted the finish to be very subtle. Well, what became subtle and acceptable to her in that condition didn't play well here. It was dull. It didn't at all match the drawing and the presentation that we were both shown and presented to the public. So that was pretty dicey. When we were looking to give PR photos to the newspaper, we decided that we didn't dare give that particular photo that looked gorgeous, you know, coppery, and because Ashland Peeps would say, oh. So there's two small little jobs that need to be accomplished here. Here is the what we did with the mural guidelines. There was a review of the project during installation in order to facilitate timely pack reviews throughout the mural prep and painting process. The applicant must provide staff with a schedule of dates for completion of each mural stage, and we had determined three stages after the wall was prepped, halfway through the application, and then within 7 days of completion. And then, following the third review, the PAC will determine if the completed mural is in compliance with the approved documents, drawings, materials, and finishes. So that is kind of the thing that I think we should look at documenting for each of our public art proposals. So I am asking for someone to create the verbiage for this that we can put in policy and probably add to guidelines someplace, and I'm not sure exactly where that is, but create a guideline for what I'm thinking about the fabrication is to look at it at 80% to see if it's going, you know, we have any concerns, to look at it in the site that is being fabricated, you know, talk about, well, you know, what does this look like outside, if you've got it inside and all of that, really create that parameter. Is there anybody that would take that on to write that up? Not you.
If you can wait till summer, I don't know much about it because I wasn't on during any of those processes.
Okay.
I'm booked until I finish teaching.
You would take it on this summer?
Well, somebody's going to have to teach me about it because I've watched a part of any of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be happy to do that. It said that we said that we would work on this in the second quarter, but you know, that's just to get it up and running. So if you will take it on, I'll be happy to, you know, reiterate and give you examples of how I think we could consider this.
Couldn't some of that conflict be avoided by requiring a sample if you're going to treat this thing this way? Send us a little piece of it.
It could.
Because that's something you could take outside, a sculpture like threshold.
Exactly.
You couldn't get out how the light was going to interact.
Definitely.
With it.
So let's talk about including that.
I mean, that's
that
how they do it in historic, is they ask the architects to come in and show us an actual sample of the brick or the tile or the whatever it is, so we can actually look at it. So we should be doing the same thing.
Because we say as part of our design intent that we understand that, particularly in the case of murals, what looks good on paper may play out differently as the process moves along, and that the PAC needs to have that conversation. So let's do that with sculptures as well. Okay, other business, moving the time. I hear you say that you're teaching pretty quickly, but I'm wondering if we don't want to consider moving this to beginning at 8:30. Is there a reason why we wouldn't want to do this? It used to be 8:30. We moved it to 8 when we were full on into projects and needed all the time, but I don't see that now. It's been rare that we've ended up at 10 o'clock. What do you think? Do you want to move it, or do you want to
move
it at 8 o'clock?
Move it. Make it 9.
I can do either. I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine with 8, but 8:30 is...
All right. Can I have... how many would like to keep it at 8? How many would like to move it till 8:30? Okay. And I have a 9 over there. I think 9 is a little late to get started. Okay, so from now on, we'll move it to...
We didn't have a motion.
Okay.
That was just a hand straw.
Right.
Straw poll.
You think we need a motion?
Yeah, please.
Okay, all right. Can I have a motion that we move the start time for the PAC meetings to 8:30?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Sorry.
It's hard for you to
find
that time, huh?
Well, it cuts into the morning.
Yeah,
you know, that's my main thing.
We'll talk less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could I backtrack for just a sec? I got ahead of myself on the presentation. That the ultimate thing that, and rather than take your time, the walking tour of the public art thing that's on this brochure is ultimately how we see the plaque project panning into.
Yeah.
So it's if you haven't seen the public art tour, it's very, very cool.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
And at a future meeting, we'll talk about redoing the brochure, pulling the money out of our account. It's allowable within our account to do that. So we can have that discussion. We have some more time. Okay. We are adjourned.
Annie, Did you get your Gmail straightened out?
I did not. I just kept...
I can... Aaron, is there a way that you can pull up a Gmail account on one of these and I can show... I think I can show Sandy what needs to happen.
So I think we should set him up as a and the member's present, but he's our official liaison.
Yeah, I understand that now. You talked about pulling the commissioners for
a day
that we'll need to redo the Lithia Park.
We did, and I totally forgot about it. Just one more thing. Sorry, I guess we're off the record on this one. As you know, we didn't culminate our site visit with Terry Doyle last week as planned. So would you like to reschedule that?
One thing you brought up, and I mentioned this when I responded to Aaron's email, I think we should probably talk about why that site might not be the best, and I didn't, because I've been gone, I don't know what's been going on about, we're just sort of nodding to this, we're not officially required to say aye, yes, or no, right?
Regarding the site?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Isn't that Park's decision?
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely Park's decision.
Yeah. But they just are politely asking us to weigh in what our thoughts are, or maybe we could just talk about at some point that site and why yes or no, and if we had any other suggestions. Because I need to be brought up to speed for one thing. But
so we kind of did that. Andy did research because they proposed that site and another one over here by the Slower Duck Pond. And turns out they weren't really serious about the Lower Duck Pond.
Oh.
So it was up there. But if you, up there at this certain point, if you read the plan or the description of where they site things out of the, of Parks and Rec, you know, that site doesn't meet any of their parameters. Mm-hmm. They talk about it, having it nestled in behind something and not...
That didn't strike me as...
It's not,
a good,
right.
Yeah.
So, but it's really up to Parks to make that decision, and they were just kind enough to say, sure, give us what you think. So my question is, do you want to do it again? Do you want to revisit that? And if so... I guess we'll do an online offer of a date, maybe.
How would you like to do that?
We'll just do it via email, since everybody is not here.
Okay.
Yeah, we're missing a couple people. So, I guess, are you interested in going and putting your 2 cents in on the site of the lantern sculpture? Yes or no?
Yeah. No. Well, I've already given my 2 cents on that site. I would say it's not a good...
Okay.
I talked to Mike about it already, too. Mike Gardner.